Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Paolo Tarantino, MD, a research fellow at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, to discuss the significance of ongoing research in HER2-low breast cancer. On April 27, 2022, the FDA granted a breakthrough therapy designation to trastuzumab deruxtecan for the treatment of adult patients with unresectable or metastatic HER2-low breast cancer who have received a prior systemic therapy in the metastatic setting or developed disease recurrence during or within 6 months of completing adjuvant chemotherapy. Patients with hormone receptor positive breast cancer should additionally have received or be ineligible for endocrine therapy. The designation is based on findings from the pivotal Phase 3 DESTINY-Breast04 trial, where trastuzumab deruxtecan led to a statistically significant and clinically meaningful improvement in progression-free survival and overall survival versus physician's choice of chemotherapy in patients with HER2-low, unresectable, and/or metastatic breast cancer, irrespective of hormone receptor status. The positive top-line results of DESTINY-Breast04 were announced in February 2022, and these data will be presented at the 2022 ASCO Annual Meeting in June. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Tarantino provided background on the categorization of HER2-low disease in breast cancer, issues with standardization and interpretation, historical management strategies, and ongoing research with agents including trastuzumab deruxtecan, trastuzumab duocarmazine, and disitamab vedotin. Thank you so much, Dr. Tarantino, for joining us on an episode of Onc Live On Air. Happy to have you with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you to Onc Live and to you, Caroline, for the invitation.
It's always interesting to discuss new developments in breast cancer, in this case, HER2-low breast cancer.
Absolutely, like an emerging subtype with a lot of implications, and it's going to be interesting to discuss about it.
Absolutely. So before we really dive in, I think it's important to kind of set the stage, give a little bit of a historical background. So with that said, what is important to know about this field?
I think it's important to look back because for the past 20 to 25 years, we have been categorizing HER2 as a binary, with a binary fashion, as HER2 negative or positive. And this was because trastuzumab, the first anti-HER2 drug when it was developed, it was working, it was bringing a clinical benefit in patients that had HER2 positive tumors, which are around 15 to 20% of all breast cancers. And so the real need in clinical practice was to identify those tumors. And when trastuzumab was tested in tumors with lower to expression, so HER2 low tumors, it didn't add any clinical benefit. There was this large phase 3 trial, the NSABP B47, which was a randomized trial, which randomized more than 3,000 patients to adjuvant trastuzumab. And trastuzumab did not, once again, improve our outcomes in this population, neither disease-free survival or overall survival. And this just recently changed with the development of novel antibody drug conjugates.
So before we get into those agents, I think it's sort of important to define what is HER2-low and sort of how it's measured. So with that said, how is that being done currently?
The most typical categorization, classification for HER2-low, the one that is used in most of the clinical trials, is tumors that have an immunohistochemical expression of HER2 of 1+ or 2+ with a negative in situ hybridization assay, so without amplification of the HER2 oncogene. And with this definition, about half of all tumors, of all breast tumors, can be defined HER2 low. However, I should say that this definition is evolving in time, because also in the IHC immunohistochemistry zero population, we do have some tumors with minimal HER2 expression. These are, today we call this ultra low HER2 expressors. And these tumors are included, patients with these tumors are included in some trials, for instance, the randomized phase 3 DESTINY-Breast06 trials. And we're gonna know in the future if in this category, novel ADCs can have activity. But for the moment, once again, the definition that is mostly used is IHC 1+ or 2+ with negative ish.
Now, I'm sure sort of that evolution of the definition makes clinical development and advances somewhat challenging.
Absolutely, very challenging. And a main challenge that we have is that this definition relies on these low categories of immunohistochemistry, which were not really standardized, because the real question once was if the tumor was either 3+ or 2+, but there wasn't a strong need in clinical practice to distinguish 0 from 1+ score. And now that we have this need, because this can change the potential enrollment of patients into clinical trials, and also potentially in the future, the open clinical possibilities for new drugs, this becomes a problem, because there are some studies, a recent study from Yale, for instance, showing that there is very little concordance among pathologists when reading slides with very low R2 expression. So in the future, we might need more standardization and possibly novel assays for HER2.
So you discussed this a little bit earlier, but just sort of elaborating on sort of what the historical management for patients with HER2 low breast cancer has been and why those sort of historical outcomes have created a need for better drug development.
So yeah, this is important because actually HER2 low is a heterogeneous category, and it's mainly made up of two entities, and one is hormone receptor positive tumors, and these are usually luminal tumors that are treated with endocrine treatment and with chemotherapy and with some biologic treatments like CDK4/6 inhibitors. But in general, for endocrine resistant tumors, the main treatment relies on several lines of chemotherapy for these patients, and outcomes with these chemotherapies are not really excellent. So there is an unmet need for novel treatments. And kind of the same happens for the other category, meaning triple negative breast cancer. These are also mainly treated with chemotherapy, although some novel options are emerging, like immunotherapy or other ADCs targeting TROP2. However, once again, after these patients have been treated with immunotherapy or anti-TROP2, we only have chemotherapy for these patients. And once again, we need novel options. And one other thing that is important to note is that most of the HER2 low tumors also co-express hormone receptors. So most of the HER2 low tumors are gonna be HR positive HER2 low. And whereas a minority, about a third of triple negative breast tumors, have low HER2 expressions.
So then diving into some of the drugs that we're seeing developed in this space, you know, I'm thinking about drugs like trastuzumab deruxtecan, trastuzumab duocarmazine, and then also dizatumab vedotin. What makes these drugs exciting and what are we sort of seeing unfold?
So these are all evolutions of what is today also T-DM1 or Kadcyla, which was the first anti-HER2 antibody drug conjugate to be approved. And it's a drug that we've been using for a long time, and it's a really active drug. And the idea is that it delivers a payload, a chemotherapy, toward the tumor cell targeting HER2. And novel ADCs in comparison to T-DM1 have some engineering improvements, and mostly they have a higher, usually, drug-to-antibody ratio. So, for instance, trastuzumab deruxtecan has got 8 molecules of payload compared to 3.5 for T-DM1. And also, most of novel ADCs have also cleavable linkers and also membrane diffusible payloads, which allow for what we call the bystander effect, which means that also in those tumors that have a heterogeneous expression of HER2, the payload can diffuse to non-HER2 expressing cells and have a bystander killing. So these are many hypotheses suggesting that these effects could help to have an activity in HER2 low tumors. And in fact, we have seen that when T-DM1 was tested in HER2 low breast cancer, response rate was around 5%, so unsatisfactory. But with all of these novel agents, trastuzumab deruxtecan, trastuzumab duocarmazine, and dizatumab vedotin, we have around 30 to 40% response rate, which is much more interesting and encouraging. And we have also recently had an announcement of phase 3 data suggesting that these drugs might come to the clinic.
That announcement being the press release from Destiny 04, I'm assuming.
Exactly. Destiny Breast 04 was the first phase 3 trial launched to let's say confirm the paradigm of HER2 low. And basically this was a trial that included patients with pretreated HER2 low tumors, both with hormone receptor positive and triple negative disease, and patients had to have received at least one or two lines of chemotherapy, and they were randomized to T-DXd or chemotherapy of physician choice. And the announcement is that not only progression-free survival, which was the primary endpoint, but also overall survival was improved with T-DXd compared with chemotherapy. And we're gonna see the data probably soon at some upcoming meeting. And this might actually change the way we treat patients which are pretreated with chemotherapy with or without endocrine treatment.
So of course we know, according to the press release, that both, like you said, progression-free survival and overall survival were improved. But in terms of safety, what would you really be looking for?
So I have to say that we have seen this agent being tested in several trials now. And what we have seen in the first phase one trials of T-DXd is that it was a very manageable agent. Most of the adverse events were either hematological or GI toxicity, meaning nausea or vomiting, but usually low grade. And what we have seen also in these first trials is that there was around a 10 to 15% rate of interstitial lung disease. And this was concerning because there were some fatal events. And however, with further trials, and in particular the Destiny Breast 03 trial, which was a randomized study in HER2 positive disease, we saw that when we improved our detection and management of interstitial lung disease, there were less severe cases and actually no lethal cases. So for instance, once again, in the Destiny Breast 03, there was around 10% rate of ILD and no grade four or five events. And I really think that this means that we are learning to manage to use this agent better. And so I would expect the side effect profile in the Destiny-Breast04 trial to be similar to what we have seen in Destiny-Breast03, which would mean that it's a manageable agent.
Now, not to get ahead of myself here, but let's say all three agents that we talked about do move forward in development and do show positive phase three data. Do you see each agent sort of carving out a niche role in this population, or are we going to be looking at potential treatment sequencing strategies?
So this is a very important question, and it goes even beyond in tier two antibody drug conjugates, because one other big news that we had recently was that the TROPiCS-HER2 phase three trial is positive, meaning that sacituzumab govitecan, an anti-TROP2 antibody drug conjugate, after being approved in triple negative disease, is also active, more active than chemotherapy in the HR positive disease. So potentially we might have in this pretreated population different ADCs available, and we might need to decide which one to prioritize. And we don't really know if one is active after the other. And I think we're gonna gather this data in the upcoming months and years. But for the moment, I think we're gonna need to do cross-trial comparisons, which is something we don't like to do, but we necessarily need to do when you have to choose treatments. So it's going to be really important to see the presentation of the data of Destiny-Breast04 or TROPiCS-02, and also other trials of disitamab vedotin and trastuzumab carmazine to understand.
Is there anything else looking at future perspectives that you'd like to offer?
So I think one trial that kind of shocked the scientific community for this scientific importance, even though it was only a very small cohort of patients, was the DAISY phase 2 trial, which is a study conducted in France, and which tested trastuzumab deruxtecan in patients with advanced breast cancer, regardless of HER2 expression. So we had a HER2 positive cohort where the drug was really active. There was around a 60% response rate, which is what we have seen also in other trials in HER2 positive disease. And then we have a HER2 low cohort. And once again, we had around 35% response rate, which is what we had observed in another phase one. But we also had an IHC zero cohort, which is something we had never seen before. And in this cohort, we had 30% response rate, which is somewhat unexpected and raises many questions regarding the best categorization over two, because possibly with the categorization of 1+ or 2+ each negative, we are excluding patients that could actually derive benefit from T-DXd. And also the reason why there was activity of T-DXd in this population. Is it because we do have some minimal HER2 expression even in IHC0? Or is it because the diffusing payload that is detached from the antibody can still have anti-tumor effect? So these are all open questions, and it's going to be important to study in deep this thing, especially once again, because there might be a population out there that might be excluded from treatment with T-DXd, but might still derive benefit. So in the future, it's going to be important to evolve our understanding and also our classification of HER2.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to seeing you again on a future episode of OncLive On Air after ASCO to discuss whether or not the results of DESTINY-04 were indeed practice changing.
And I look forward to join you again. Thank you again for the invitation.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.